And now it's time for the TOT Cast with Crystal Cranus, Natea J, and Ryan Greco.
And welcome back to this edition of the TOT Cast. I am Ryan Greco here on the Fan Side of Network. And as always, I am joined by Chris O'Cranus and Natea J. Be sure to reach the show at Tip of the Tower on Twitter. And also, you can reach me at Ryan Greco 416. You can reach Chris O'Cranus at Chris O'Cranus. And of course, you can always reach Natea at Tay11 underscore. That is T-E-Y 11 underscore. On Twitter, and always be sure to like our Facebook page.
Well, good evening, gentlemen. Here we are. Chris, how are you feeling so far this evening?
I've never been better, just to troll Natea a little bit here.
And why are you trolling Natea?
I miss the guy, man. It's been a couple weeks so that I'm on here.
Honestly, that's the worst. And that, yeah. I mean, where have you been?
New year, new me. That's all I gotta say. I'm just kidding. Well, Happy New Year, guys, to start off. Happy New Year, Chris, Ryan.
Happy New Year, Natea.
Thank you.
I must say, the New Year has been great so far. A lot of relaxing, a lot of time, you know, spending with the family. And, you know, that's pretty much where I've been, with the family, you know, taking time to unwind a little bit. I'm sorry I couldn't be here with you guys last time, but as I heard, it was an awesome show. And I'm just excited to be back and, you know, grinding it out with you guys.
Well, you've been lifting this whole time.
I wish, man. It's the holidays. You know how that is.
Now you got to get back into the lifting phase, actually, in fact.
Exactly.
Well, I know a team that didn't start off the New Year's on the right foot, and that would be the Toronto Raptors. They just recently dropped another game to the Chicago Bulls, this time 115-113. And then right after that, followed it up with a shellacking from Cleveland.
You know, though, that's a tough back-to-back to play in Chicago and then play Cleveland the night after. And
especially your rested Cleveland team.
Yeah, and finally all three playing together.
Right.
Kyrie, Love, and LeBron. It's the first time in a long time they've actually been together for an extended period of time, so it's never an easy back-to-back right there.
Never. And Cleveland, to be honest, was firing on all cylinders. Kyrie had his best game of the season. He looked like finally the Kyrie of old. You know, LeBron was distributing like the LeBron we always see. JR was hitting wild threes all over the place. And James Jones even got in some of the action. He was hitting threes for what it seemed like half court. So, no, that team was not going to be beat by anybody. And the Raptors, unfortunately, cut the bad hand of that.
Yeah, and you can't forget Shumpert, having Shumpert back in the mix.
Right.
Yeah, no, honestly, I keep forgetting about him as well. Cleveland's just really deep from top down when you look at it in the Eastern Conference.
Yep,
it's not surprising why it's them and everybody else, to be quite honest.
Yeah, even despite the fact that there's quite a few teams in the Eastern Conference that are even within striking distance. I mean, the team right now, I think that's in seventh, is only four games back of Cleveland.
Yeah, it's actually a really tight Eastern Conference, and it's kind of funny when you look at the Raptors, they're a game out of second, but they're also a game and a half out of the playoffs altogether. So it's an interesting dynamic that they have there. One of the things that kind of was tough to watch when they played the Bulls, though, was Damari Carroll, who now is going to be out. How long, unknown, but he's going to be out a while with his knee injury. What'd you guys think about Damari? I mean, it was tough watching Jimmy Butler torch him.
Yeah, yeah. And I kind of tweeted about this. Jimmy Butler is a hell of a player, but when he gets on a roll, man, I didn't know he had that in him, to be honest with you. I watched the game really closely and saw a lot of things Jimmy Butler did that I didn't know he was capable of. You know, beating Michael Jordan's record for points and a half. With what, 40?
He did. Beat it by one point.
It was incredible to see him playing like that. But a lot of that was because DeMarc Carroll wasn't fully healthy. And it's tough to watch him out there, you know, playing through the pain because you know the guy's a gamer and you know he's going to give it everything he has each night. But, you know, I think it would have been smart to kind of shut him down a little bit, knowing that he was struggling so much. And especially when you see a guy like that struggling on a defensive end, he takes pride in defense, right? And
yep.
And to be...
That's what got him big money.
Exactly. And to for Jimmy Butler to put on that kind of display, it just shows you he wasn't right. And, you know, it goes to show you that, you know, even the coaches, they've got to step in. Even when a guy says he's good enough to play, but you see him struggling at what he's best at, coaches got to kind of step in there and, you know, put him aside and get someone else in there, get some fresh bodies in there. Mainly James Johnson.
Well, they refuse. Like, I don't know what Casey and James Johnson have with each other, or if one of them has one on. It's just something. But he refuses to play James Johnson.
Yeah.
For whatever reason.
It's a shame because that guy's a spark.
That's the mystery. That's the mystery of the season. I mean, sometimes you can kind of see it. He'll miss a defensive rotation here or there. But it's not enough to keep him entirely out of a game and not see 1 minute. He's playing as much as Norman Powell sometimes. And,
yep.
And James Johnson has an NBA skill set that not a lot of people have. He can take the ball to the hole.
He's got the length, too.
He's got the length. He can
guard multiple positions.
Exactly. Yeah. He's courageous. He's not scared to take it to the hole, as you see some other guys like don't like to do. And he can create his own offense.
Well, he's a better rotational player than people give him credit for.
Right.
He's mm-hmm. not a starter, but he's also not a coach's decision either.
Yeah, exactly. He's definitely not the guy on the 12th. He's not the 12th man at the end of the bench.
That's one of my biggest mysteries of the whole year is how they're using James Johnson. I mean, I was reading something where his role, like he had a tweet the other day where he said he just put underutilized.
Oh, it was a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, a couple weeks ago. And the coaches talked to him about that and said, you know, it wasn't right for him to do that. And they explained to him that, you know, you're the third power forward. And, you know, the other two guys are doing great. You got Scola, who's playing well, and Patterson's coming off the bench and playing well. And he's essentially the third center, too. JV, Bismack, and then, you know, him in a pinch. Yeah. Right? So the guys, they basically explained to him that the guys ahead of him are playing better right now. But you know, that's what our coaches say. You know, obviously the guys are playing better, but find a way to get him in there. He has something that this team lacks, and you know, that's just my take on it. I don't know what you guys think.
No, I agree with you, but I mean, to not get too far in James Johnson chat, because there literally is no answer to why he doesn't play.
And he's going to see his minutes, especially now with Carroll out, because you can make the argument. Actually, I don't even think it's really an argument. I think it's more of a statement that losing Carroll, other than losing either Lowry or DeRozan, knock on wood, losing Carroll is probably the biggest blow to this team.
It is.
100%.
Because he does so much.
It's true.
D and three. That's his claim.
I like that. D and
came,
three.
Came to fame, that's so to say. So D and three. He'll shoot the three ball really well, high percentage, and he'll defend. He's actually a really good defender. I watched him a lot this year against like some of the top guys in the league, and he gives guys trouble. So
yeah,
you know,
takes great angles.
He does. He's just a smart player, and I think in the playoff series, he's going to be the difference maker that we didn't have last year.
Mm-hmm. I really hope so on the perimeter, because some nights they need it. This Raptors defense doesn't force a lot of turnovers. Mm-hmm. I think they're in the bottom five of the league in forcing turnovers.
Yeah.
So having a guy like Carroll there to defend the perimeter, although you're not getting the turnovers, you're also going to help lower the efficiency of teams out on the perimeter, which come playoff time is key, because those dagger threes can not only change a game, they can change an entire series.
Mm-hmm. You can only stop, you can only force an offense to take bad shots so many times before they start finding the groove. Yeah. You know, it's the NBA. Guys are going to make tough shots. It doesn't matter who it is on the floor. Mm-hmm. So those are all those things that you got to take into consideration.
And, you know, so with this recent stretch, I've had a couple of takeaways, like three big takeaways that I've noticed that, you know, I think we can discuss a little bit further. One is the slow starts. Like, they're a notoriously slow starting team, and I just want to know what you guys think is why. Why are they a slow starting team? I mean, if they know that, can't the coaches do something about it? Can't they, like, tell me what you think.
It's kind of weird. You don't really see a lot of, like, high-low situations or high ball screens, pick and rolls. It's just, they kind of get out there, and it's just really weird watching them play in terms of there's no continuity or there's structure on offense. But I feel like if Lowry or DeRozan doesn't get it going early, the team just takes a while as a whole. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of weird to watch.
It is weird to watch.
There's a lot of iso ball situations for
these guys.
You know, and it's one thing to have, you know, the Raptors are lucky to have two guys, let alone, like, you know, it's one thing to have one guy who's offensively gifted like a Lowry or DeRozan, but to have both of them, mm-hmm. it just seems that, you know, they've been able to get away for a long time this season playing a lot of iso ball. And any time that they've went up, and this is why I find they keep losing to the good teams, and they keep beating the bad teams, because they're relying too much on their talent and not enough as a cohesive unit.
Right.
Playing iso. You know, that's kind of more what I was trying to get at.
I'd like to see them kind of get, if you're going to start JV, get him more involved in the offense earlier on.
Right.
Yeah.
I know it may,
because that makes a huge difference with him. Yep. You see him, he's involved early. His defense picks up, and he's more involved in the game.
Yeah,
he cares. He cares more when he knows he's getting touches.
Right.
Defensively, he's horrendous, but if you're going to get him involved offensively, get him going early. Even if it's just a low post block, send him up back to the basket. Let him get something going. It will make a difference for him.
Shaq said it best. Feed your big man.
Yeah.
He said this time and time again on TNT. He says it time and time again on the podcast. Anytime you're talking about a big guy, he's like, hey, you got to feed the big man.
Yeah.
Let him play. Let him get the touches. Let him feel like he's important instead of just doing the grunt work. It's the same thing as, you know, buying beers for your linemen, for your offensive linemen, if you're the quarterback going out to the bar.
Yeah.
Make them feel important because they're the ones doing the dirty work when it's all said and done.
Right. And also, my other thing I noticed, and I've been kind of struggling with this, is the in my head, I think it's a you know how you have quarterback controversies. And it's not going to be so much of a controversy because JV is a starter, but the JV Bismack issue. And I think it might be an issue now because it's not so much a controversy because JV is getting the starter money. He's going to be the starter. But Bismack, at times this year when JV's been out, I think he's outplayed him during stretches. And I see it. He has more energy. He's more active on the defensive end. He'll get that offensive rebound. He's a monster on the glass. He'll defend pick and rolls. He won't score, right? And he has trouble catching the ball in the post.
He's got that great post move that confuses
It confuses himself sometimes. But he'll hit his free throws. He's not a horrible free throw shooter. I'm just wondering why he's not getting more minutes and they're just forcing JV to be in there. What do you guys think about that whole JV issue?
There's about 60 million plus reasons why JV's going to be on the
money
floor.
Money talks.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you invest in the guy long term, right? You gotta make sure you get something out of him.
Yep. So in today's NBA, was that a mistake? I mean, I know he's a young player and you have to, and the league is leaning towards smaller players. Like, as you saw in the game, the Cavs benched Mozgov and put Tristan Thompson in the starting lineup for that same reason. Mozgov is a liability on defense.
Raptors have a great record. The Cavaliers have a great record whenever Thompson
starts. Oh yeah, absolutely. So I don't know whether this issue needs to be addressed or what needs to be done, but it's definitely JV's out there and he's struggling on defense. And he's not getting shots to fall and he's frustrated. And then you see Bismack comes in. He doesn't care about his offense. He's just grabbing boards. He's just playing defense. He's just staring guys down, giving people a Mutombo finger.
I think you would know this better than anybody. Coming off injuries, like you've battled through injuries in your career, it takes a little while to get your legs back, get accustomed to actually playing again.
It does.
So, come back and talk to me in like 2-3 weeks about JV, and if he's still struggling, we got a real problem.
Right.
But if he's not by then, I think it just might be a case of he doesn't have his legs back. You can't emulate actual games in practice.
No,
that's true.
And he does look. Sometimes he looks okay, but he does kind of look. He's always had slow feet.
He's
but
a little
he
bit
does
aloof.
Kind of look, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, he looks aloof out there.
Yeah,
he's just fouling people just because he's just out of control. And
I think it might be a case of he just hasn't played a lot of games recently, so maybe his issue.
And I'm not saying he's like Bismack is better than him. I'm just saying right now in the current situation that they have at hand, maybe play Bismack a little bit more because he provides. The defense, the rebounding,
Well, one player that's kind of covered up and masked a lot of the Raptors' issues recently is DeMar DeRozan.
Yeah.
He's played out of his mind this month.
Nuts.
Like, in the past month of January, the Raptors went 9-6.
Mm-hmm.
DeRozan was pretty much lights out. He averaged 25 points a game, shot 47% from the field, and he got to the free throw line almost 8.5 times a game, which is something we didn't see a lot of in the first couple of months. I mean, 8.5 times a game getting the free throw line.
That's
definitely superstar.
Second to James Harden.
How far along has he came along, even in his career, from a guy when he first broke into the league was a guy who would always settle for the jump shot.
He couldn't shoot.
And that's the thing. That was the worst part about it. He couldn't shoot, but he would settle for the jump shot. He would not attack the rim enough.
Yeah.
And now it's like you'd have to get a rope to try and pull him back from attacking the basket nowadays.
Yeah. Which is
I think the thing with DeRozan, what really took his game up another notch was, and people always talk about it, is the Team USA. He's gone to 2 straight Team USA camps, and working with that caliber of player, just like the best of the best. It does something to you, right? So whenever you're around elite competition, you're always forced to kind of evaluate your game and see where you are compared to them. Mm-hmm. And I think, DeMar being in those camps was able to, sort of look at his game and see how far or how close he was. And, to his credit, he put in the proper amount of work to kind of match and be on the level of what James Harden when it comes to two guards. He's, arguably top 3 shooting guards in the NBA.
You think so?
Arguably.
I think he's getting his way there, but let's not forget about beginning of this year.
Shooting guard. He struggled a little bit.
He was very mediocre.
Yeah, he struggled, but he's come around.
Is this month of December an anomaly, or is this something that we should expect to see more of going forward?
I think the kind of player DeMar DeRozan wants to be, I think this is what you can expect to see going forward. He's, you know, high pride guy. The guy puts the work in. I think you know, beginning of season, like, you can't place a big stake in what happens at the beginning of season.
I'll say one thing right now. As far as to answer your question, Chris, is this something we should come to expect? This is what we're going to need to expect if the Raptors are going to make any serious playoff push.
100%.
This is the guy that we're going to need moving forward if the Raptors are to be taken seriously. And when you get into the postseason and moving on further, you know, further seasons down the line.
I agree.
Whether we expect it or whether he can actually do it is still up for debate, because obviously none of us can predict the future. But I think, you know, this is what we're going to need. And you can tell he wants it. Like, he's never been the type of guy. The one thing I always loved about DeMar DeRozan is that, I don't know if it was the fact because he was kind of out here in Toronto, which is a media market to a certain extent that gets ignored a lot by the United States, but it's allowed him to really stay away from joining the Friends Club. And you guys know exactly what I'm talking about when I mean that. This is a guy who doesn't just go and pal around and shake hands and you know, dap opposing star players when they're playing against him. No, his goal, when you see him out there, he rarely ever smiles. He's getting right down to business. Mm-hmm. He'll get right up in anyone's face as far as it comes to competing mm-hmm. against anybody. And he's always carried that kind of swagger of the redheaded stepchild of NBA stars.
Yeah.
You know, because he'll make the play. He'll make the playoffs with his team. He'll lead his team to the playoffs. He'll go into the All-Star games, but you'll never see him as like one of those guys just like high-fiving LeBron James just yeah. because. And a lot of it could also be his upbringing, in a sense, you know, as a kid from Compton, like he, you know, you could tell like he comes
not backing out from anyone.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So it's like, I think that's just one thing. He's got the tools and he's got it in his genes to be that type of player all the time. Whether he's going to be, I hope so, because the Raptors are going to need it.
So is he somebody the Raptors can build around going forward, though? I mean, this is a contract year. It's no secret. Everybody knows that. But can the Raptors actually build around DeMar DeRozan going forward?
They're one guy short. If they get one more guy, absolutely.
They have. Yeah. I think they have built around him and Kyle Lowry. But putting around guys around him to, you know, maximize his game a little bit. And I think they're going to continue to do that, because who else are you going to get? That's the question. If not DeRozan, who else?
You can even pose the question, you know, if you bring in somebody who, just for the sake of argument, happens to be more talented or they pay more money to DeMar, how's that going to affect his production? How's that really going to affect him as a guy who's been the guy
right.
in Toronto now? I think they tried that
with Rudy Gay a little bit, and you saw what happened when he left. They tried to bring in a guy, you know, a bigger name type of guy, and it just didn't work. The chemistry was off. The continuity was off. Rudy Gay leaves. DeMar DeRozan blossoms. The team blossoms and is much far better off without him. You're going to have to build around DeRozan. Like Ryan said, the team needs him. The city needs him. And I don't think you can bring anybody else in with that it's going to be able to have that big of an impact with the community like DeMar DeRozan has already had.
I think aside from Durant, the only other yes. player, like Durant's the only
guy. Is he going to come here, though?
No, I mean, that's a whole nother.
That's the whole Drake yeah. Effect.
That's
know.
So many things.
Let's hope.
I could go into it. But
let's
I mean,
hope.
In terms of having an impact on the franchise, the only other player I could possibly see having an impact possibly greater than him would be a guy like a Jamal Murray coming out of this year's draft. If he was to be drafted in the top five, let's say, by the Raptors, and he excels into the star yeah. that people think he can be.
Yeah. yeah.
Being from here, yeah. Canadian, all that, that's the only way I could see somebody being bigger. That's it.
Yeah, but
in terms of like immediate future,
in the next like five.
Yeah, if you want to talk like Wiggins and stuff, that's further down the road than people
yeah,
think.
Like yeah, exactly.
Five, six.
Yeah, Durant, Murray, and
second contract.
By some fluke, the Raptors were to get Ben Simmons. That's not going to happen. But
yeah,
if by some fluke that was, those are only three guys I can see.
For that to happen, they're going to need Lowry to suffer a season-ending injury and DeRozan to be in a coma. And that's not happening.
You're gonna have to.
I'm just kidding. That's not happening. That's what I'm saying.
You're gonna have to out-tank over here. Out-tank the 76ers.
Right.
And nobody is out-tanking the 76ers.
They will get their Ben Simmons.
Right? They have the blueprint down on that.
Honestly, they're like Gollum. The 76ers are like Gollum. They're just convinced and they want it. They want the pick every year.
It's funny, they're probably not even going to get the first pick because of the whole lottery, but it's...
The Lakers are going to get it.
No.
Because a healthy LA is a healthy NBA.
Yeah, right.
And they need that. The Lakers have been
trash.
That's just
going to be into the conspiracy theory that, you know, people
Patrick thinking, Ewing, anyone?
Well, I mean, the NBA is the only sport to get caught for
right
setting up games. Right. I'm not going to get into this.
Yeah,
but
yeah. Right. It's, well, that's for another episode, kids. What,
five teams have won the championship in the past 20-some-odd years?
Yeah.
I'd say it's a good league. Just tune in June.
You got it.
It's true.
You gotta ask those questions.
Right. Well, okay, here. What do you guys make of the Raptors going forward then? I mean, statistically, like especially advanced statistics, they're one of the elite teams in the entire league. If you guys look at net rating, which is basically how many points a team scores for every 100 possessions, mm-hmm. the Raptors are the fourth best in the Eastern Conference, and they're actually the eighth best in the NBA. And if you want to go a little further with it, only three teams have a net rating of 5 or better, so plus 5 or better. That's the Cavs, the Warriors, and the Spurs. The Raptors took two of those three teams down to the wire twice, the Warriors and once the Spurs, who they actually beat.
Mm-hmm.
And the Raptors themselves own a 3.4 net rating. So basically for every 100 possessions, the Raptors are extremely competitive. If you want to use one advanced metric to kind of support the notion that the Raptors are actually one of the elite teams.
Mm-hmm.
So to kind of pose a long-winded question here, what do you guys make of the Raptors going forward? Are they elite? Can they be that second team that everybody's so desperately searching for in the East?
As long as they stay ahead of their opponents, or at least keep the game close, yeah. But if they fall behind, they've shown that they're not exactly a very good team when they fall behind. They're a team that panics. They're a team that relate that go. This goes back to the whole ISO ball kind of strategy that they put together on their offense. You can tell that Coach Casey definitely made a serious attempt this season at emphasizing defense over anything. And okay, it has been showing
thought,
some exacts.
Hold that thought, because the Raptors' offense has far exceeded the defense this year, especially from like an advanced metric perspective.
Yeah.
The Raptors are ranked the fourth best defense, yeah. And a lot of people are saying that they've been sacrificing defense to generate offense, yeah. Which has been weird.
They are.
To say what you were saying earlier, yeah. It's been all the talk about Case in the offseason, defense.
Yeah. But that defense was, you know, put in place with the thought that you'd have a healthy Damari Carroll, and you know that's you know, you can't discount the fact that he's been pretty much hurt the whole year. He's probably had maybe 5 games where he's been fully healthy. So I mean, I think with a healthy Damari Carroll, those numbers will go down.
Well, they're ranked the 11th best defensive efficiency team in the NBA right now,
right?
Mm-hmm. And it could be the even 5th best offensive
right.
team.
Right.
Offensive efficiency wise,
right.
So it's kind of weird.
While they're ahead.
So your question is, are they an elite team?
While they're ahead,
are
right?
they a team that yeah. can hold on to second? I don't think they're an elite team. I think they're a good team. I think they're on that. You know, they're the elite teams in the league: the San Antonio's, the Cleveland's, the
Golden State. Yeah. Those three teams,
and maybe put OKC in there when they're fully healthy. But I think Toronto is on that second tier with Indiana, with Dallas, with Miami. I think they're in that second tier, and that's where they belong.
Miami scares me, to be honest.
They do, and yeah. they've always given Toronto a lot of trouble.
Yeah, with or without LeBron James, right. And that goes back to the whole thing I was talking about earlier. Well, with their offensive rating, yeah, they're one of the best in the league when they're winning, and as soon as they fall behind by any significant margin, they drop down to the middle of the pack, to a middle of the pack offense.
You know what? The Raptors' huge thing is 100, right? It's 100 points. If they hold their opponents,
that goes back, yeah, even to
right,
last year,
right? If they hold, they're 19-3 when they hold their opponents under 100 points. So it clearly 100 is their magic number. If their defense holds up and you know they get to 100 first, they're mostly going to win the game, and that's something that you know we look at, we can say, and we can see the numbers, but it's not playing out. Like they can have all the meetings they want and be like, we need to hold guys under 100, but they need to find a way to implement it. And I don't have the answers. I'm not in the coaching staff. I can't, you know, tell you what
well,
they're
here,
trying to do. I can just look at it from afar.
Here's one area that's been killing the Raptors this year is defending the three ball.
Yes.
Yeah, the three ball.
You can see that.
Well, they've
Cleveland made like 18.
Yeah, teams are shooting 36.7% against them this year, which is fifth worst in the NBA. And over this last stretch of 10 games, it's gone up to 38.1%. I mean, if almost 4 out of every 10 shots the opposition is taking is a 3,
yeah.
and it's going in,
yeah,
that's 12 points right there.
And it's interesting. It's interesting you bring that up as well, because this was a team that was molded by general manager Masai Ujiri as a team to have length,
yep.
especially on the wings. And he saw, in a way, he saw the way the NBA was trending towards, with a lot more threes being taken. And you're going to need to be able to contest those shots and try and alter those shots. So why is it that the Raptors are having such a difficult time defending the three, yet they've been built as a team to be lengthy on the wings and to be able to try and contest these shots?
Well, I kind of think they've become more concerned with defending the passing lanes than the actual perimeter. Mm-hmm. And by protecting the rim as much as they have been, it's opened up the perimeter again, because this team does not force a lot of turnovers. Mm-hmm. I think they're in the bottom five of that as well. And like, they're in the same class as the Knicks when it comes to forcing turnovers. Mm. Let's be real. If we think the Raptors are going to go anywhere, a lot of the great teams in NBA history, for that matter, force turnovers. And when they force turnovers, they make you pay.
Yeah.
And they also defend the perimeter. The Raptors do neither well right now. So it's kind of bizarre how they've been able to maintain success going 9-6 in December,
mm-hmm.
but have defended the perimeter like horribly, haven't forced any turnovers. And like Nate was saying, they've given up 100 points and they've really lived off their offense.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just bizarre. Mm-hmm. It's really bizarre.
What would you try and do to fix it, Chris?
I don't know. I mean, with no Damari Carroll, it's going to be tough to defend the perimeter. I really don't know how you would address that issue.
Yeah, the thing is, I guarantee you, coaches, they know this. They know this before we do. They know it. They address it to the team, but it's just, it's all about execution. I mean, once you roll the ball out there and you start playing, it's, you know, stuff starts happening. You know, there's only so much coaching that can be made. You know, it's up to the players to execute and produce.
I got a question for you guys then. Coming up, they've got Brooklyn, Washington, Philadelphia, Orlando, and then Brooklyn again. Obviously, these games are all going to happen without Carroll.
But it's a good time for them to happen without Carroll.
Exactly. So, but that's that. Out of these games, which one of these games do you think could be a trap game for the Raptors,
Chris? Probably the one that's a back-to-back on a travel night, if there is one. I haven't looked at the schedule.
Yeah.
But if there is one that's on a back-to-back with a travel night, it's just human at sports. It's the way it is.
If you're just looking at these teams.
Yeah, they do have a back-to-back, actually.
When is it?
And it's January 8th and 9th, Washington, and they play Philadelphia the next game on the 9th.
Is that on the road, or is that at home?
They're at Philadelphia.
They're at home in...
The next four is on the road. So they're in London for Brooklyn, and then Washington, Philadelphia, Orlando, all on the road.
Keep in mind, they're one game behind second place and one and a half out of last in the playoffs, so the eighth seed.
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously, back-to-back against a bad team like Philadelphia would be a good trap candidate.
Yeah, take the points.
probably take the under, too. The next 10 games, right, they face six teams under 500. Like, six of the next 10 teams they face under 500.
Let's be real. This is a stretch where they should.
They should.
They should win 7 out of 10 games.
Right.
JV should get it going.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
The team should just work out a lot of kinks that they have,
you know,
and let Carroll get healthy.
Right. The thing is, they're on the road for four, which is always tough.
Yep.
But the toughest team they're going to face is Orlando, which is on the road. So
they're actually not that bad.
Orlando's not that bad. I think they're over 500 by two games.
The combined record
for these next 10 teams that they're facing is 151 and 191. So that's a 442 winning percentage.
They should.
It sounds good.
Yes.
They should be able to pull these all off. Right. But if there was any game I would say that they would probably lose against, it would be Orlando.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, this should be a stretch where they not only move up the Eastern Conference standings, they start to cement themselves as the creme de la creme in the Atlantic division.
Let's hope so. Because this is a tough division this year.
You got to win the division first.
They're going to win the division, but New York is the second best team in the division.
Okay, well, here.
They're four games under 500.
Every season that you guys start, the first goal you
win
guys
write down?
Win
Boston
the division.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Boston's 19-15.
Right? Oh, I'm sorry. Boston. Yeah.
Yeah. And Boston's looking pretty decent this year. They got good old Canadian boy from British Columbia.
A lot of good second year guys.
And you know what the thing about that's interesting about Boston is that's a team that's been together for quite a few years now. That nucleus, you know, that's a team that loaded up on draft picks. They've got some really good, young, solid bodies. Very good coach. That's a team that's not afraid of anyone, as you could tell from last playoffs against the Cavaliers.
Mm-hmm.
It actually almost, you can make the argument, cost the Cavaliers a title.
It did. It helped. Love was out.
Yep.
Well, let's say this then with the Raptors going forward. Obviously, they have a soft 10 games. But obviously, anybody who's watching this team, whether Casey wants to admit or not or is even conscious of it, they clearly value offense over defense right now. Is that going to change these 10 games? Is the rotation going to change? What's the antidote to basically getting this team to play the elite level caliber basketball we all think they can play?
I think we're looking at these 10 games. That's the antidote, those softer opponents. No, nothing better than getting your game on track than facing a weaker opponent and you know, assert your dominance, so to speak. So, you know, these next 10 games, the antidote is having weaker teams.
I'll break it down to three things. One, limit JV's minutes, especially if he's struggling offensively. Let Bismack get some work in there. Let him stay physical. Let him play physically. Two, please play James Johnson. Please, just get him in
we
there.
Need
him.
We need him to figure out what's happening.
While Damari Carroll's out,
they started him last night against the Cavs.
Good, so. Because they're going to have to. Yeah. Like that's going to be something we're going to have to move forward. And I can be patient with James for a couple games because, like we said, he's got the next couple of games are going to be relatively – they're not cream puff, but we'll just say that it's a lighter schedule than what they've been getting a lot to start off their season.
They're games they should win.
Exactly. And then it'll be interesting to see what happens come time to face Boston, Miami, and the Clippers to finish out that 10-game set. So that's where it's going to be really interesting to see what have we learned now that we've played seven games, six games without Damari Carroll. The last thing I would just say is everyone keep it together. They just need to be able to keep it together in that sense. Figure out what their new identity is with Carroll out. And as far as valuing the defense, or sorry, as valuing offense over the defense, they're going to have to continue to do that, especially now that they have Jonas Valanciunas back in the lineup, which is a guy who's more offense than defense, and that's the way he's going to be for pretty much the rest of his career, unless he makes a real metamorphosis during the offseason. And they've got no Damari Carroll anymore, a guy who's all about D3, right? Yep. So the only thing that they're going to have to do is continue working on their offense, continue relying on their offense, and whenever they need those big stops, make sure Bismack's in there. Well, that's what I would say. That would be my opinion of it.
I think the teams they have coming up, they're very capable of outscoring.
Yes.
They can outscore all these teams.
Yeah.
No problem.
Yeah. Bismack better get his minutes in, though, against Boston, Miami, and Los Angeles. He better. He's going to need his moments, and Jonas is going to need a rest because those guys, every single one of those teams, have a talented front court that's going to give Jonas headaches at some point or another during those games.
Yeah, no, I could definitely see that. I mean, it'll be interesting to see the dynamic that starts to begin between JV and Bismack in terms of more so what Casey's going to do with their minutes, how he's going to utilize them. Are we going to go back to seeing last year with the whole boycotting JV in the fourth quarter?
No, that's not good.
You can't do that.
No, you can't. You gotta
especially
let
the guy you plan to have like as your future corner piece. So
yeah, I don't see that happening. But if people are going to be that down on JV right now, then hey, what do you think Casey's thinking?
Right. One last quick thought: who's lost in all this? Patrick Patterson found his shot again.
He found a shot, and he found a counter move to a shot.
Stretch four. There you go.
You see a bunch of times where. You know, guys will run out to him, and he'll pump fake, and he'll take 2-3 dribbles into the lane, and you know, lay up, dunk, or draw a foul.
Yeah,
I mean, I think it's valuable to have a guy like that, you know, starting to step it up because the bench really kind of dictates whether they win or lose games now. Like if the bench plays well, they're winning. If the bench is poor, consequently, they're losing games. So
such is basketball.
So the bench is a big part of their bench. He's sort of like their sixth man, him and Ross. It's going to be interesting to see if he can keep his play up. And, you know, as this team goes, as the bench goes, this team goes.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, the bench is ebb and flow with a lot of the pace that goes on in the game. Mm-hmm. In terms of if the tempo's there, the bench can just kind of keep up with the pace of play. Or bringing in a guy like Corey Joseph to facilitate, let's say, a half-court offense, still goes down.
Yep.
Even if it means keeping Lowry out there with him, it makes a world of a difference. And it gives the Raptors so many options in terms of what they can do and how they want to attack teams, how they don't want to defend teams. It's just a whole different dynamic that they can actually use. And if Casey can keep that up and actually do it to a way that's going to be effective, they'll be a really good team. But I think the jury's still out on whether Casey's capable of doing that or not.
Yep.
Well, that should wrap up just about all the stuff we've had to talk about the Raptors here. But while the team's on their four-game road trip, I would encourage fans to go down to St. Mike's College. Go check out the 56th annual tournament of the St. Mike's Nike Invitational Tournament.
I might be there checking out.
Why not? See some of the GTA's best high school players play. It's worth going to watch. It's one of the oldest traditions that the school has in terms of tournaments.
Yep.
So why not go support your local market and check out the St. Mike's Nike Invitational Tournament?
Please do, because they are major, just like in their name.
That wraps up this episode of the TOTCast. As always, you can subscribe to the show on iTunes and SoundCloud, and you can follow us on Twitter at Tip of the Tower, or on Facebook by liking our Facebook page, also at Tip of the Tower. If you want to reach out to me, you can follow me on Twitter at Crystal Kranitz. You can also follow Ryan Greco on Twitter at RyanGreco416, and of course, you can follow our beloved wide receiver, Nateya J, on Twitter at TEY11_. That's Tay11_. Thanks again for listening to the show, and have yourself a great day.